The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Habit 3. Put first things first.
See, Habit 3 basically means you take the program you wrote of Habit 2, you take your mission statement and your plans and goals, and then you execute around it. That's what it is. I call it first things first. So you take the first things that you decide, what are the first things, and you organize your life to put them first, and then you carry them out first. That's what Habit 3 is. It is the physical creation as distinguished from the mental creation. First things first. Now, if you'll take your little booklet, you'll see a chart in there showing four quadrants. It's called the time management matrix. Let's define the words used. Urgent means has the appearance of requiring immediate attention. Okay? Is a phone urgent? A ringing phone. Is it? Now remember the definition. It has the appearance of requiring immediate attention.
Yes,
it's urgent. It may or may not be important. You with me? Okay, let's define important. Important means it contributes to what? Your mission and your significant goals. That's what important means. To the results you're going after. All right, so the phone may be important, it may be unimportant. What about the mail on your desk? Is that urgent? It has the appearance of urgency. If it's within your purview, anything that is within our purview, visible to us, has the appearance of requiring some attention. See, it's unopened. Very hard for some people to leave it unopened. A lot of it could be very important, unimportant. Now, that which is both important and urgent are usually called problems, or sometimes crises. So in that quadrant, Quadrant 1, you might write down problems, crises. They're both urgent and important. You with me? All right, Quadrant 2 is important but not urgent. So what would we put in that quadrant? Prevention and opportunities. Prevention and opportunities. Now, they're not urgent. Prevention is not urgent. But is it important? Very important. It's critically important. Quadrant three is urgent, but not important. Put these three words starting with P. Proximate. What does that mean? Right in front of you, see? Proximate. Pressing. Other people's expectations. See, it's pressing on you. And popular. And in quadrant 4, put the word pleasant. Now, if you deeply get habit 2 in your life, you can turn quadrant 2 into pleasant. But reactive minds, usually that which is not important nor urgent is pleasant. Just relax. It's pleasant. It's enjoyable. See? I can sit and just kind of gas with someone all morning about the game last Saturday. It's pleasant. You know, you should be preparing for the day. Your important projects, creating, planning, and so forth. Now, I'd like to suggest you draw a simple little arrow going from the left-hand corner of the four quadrants, the lower left-hand corner, right up through quadrant 3 and through quadrant 2, and say no to quadrant 3 and yes to quadrant 2. In other words, say no to that which is unimportant, however urgent it may be, and say yes to that which is important, whether it's urgent or not. Now, why do I say that? Well, look, quadrant 1, we know we have to do, correct? We know we have to do that, so that isn't a question. Quadrant 4, we know we should neglect, so that isn't a question. Question is quadrant 2 and 3. If you can learn to say no to quadrant 3 as well as 4 and yes to quadrant 2, you have learned the essence of effective time management. I literally believe to say no to quadrant 3 and yes to quadrant 2 is the summary of the whole field of time management. Let me show you why. What's going to happen to quadrant 1 if you neglect quadrant 2? It will balloon so large there's nothing left but crises. And what will the language of that person be, the reactive language? I have to, but I don't have time. I'm in the pounding surf. I hardly have time for the breathing space. Here comes one big wave. And it just throws me to the ground. I come back up and here comes another one. How many of you really feel your days are like that? One crisis after another. That's called management by crisis. Why? Quadrant 2 is neglected. But then people say, if you're spending all your time putting out fires and mending fences and solving problems of quadrant 1, how do you have any time for quadrant 2? What's that language? Reactive language, see? Where's the problem to that person? Outside themselves. If you think the problem is outside yourself, that very thought process is the problem. You always have some little discretionary time. However small, use it to work on quadrant 2. Now, I'm going to ask you a question and ask you to write down the answer. And I'll maintain every answer will be in quadrant 2. Watch. If you were to do one thing that you know would make a significant positive impact in your professional life, that you know would make a huge impact in your professional life, if you did it superbly well, what would that one thing be? Write it down. Write down the answer, and then do the same thing on your personal life. If you were to do one thing, superbly well, that you know would have a great impact in your personal life, say with your family and so forth, what would that one thing be? My guess is, we wrote down under one of these areas, PC, right? Preparation. Habit 2, planning and organizing. Beginning with the end in mind, seeing it, first creation. Getting a clear sense of priorities. Or deep communication with the key people of our life, making deposits into the emotional bank account, which deals with the later habits. Am I right or not? The key is to focus on what truly is important and to say no to the rest. Now, why is it most people neglect quadrant 2? Why do they not focus on the important? Why do they focus upon quadrant 3? Okay, it's hard. Look, quadrant 2 has to be acted on. Quadrant 3 acts on you. It's pressing, it's popular, and it's proximate. It acts on you. What about deep delegation? Deep, complete delegation. So another person is left free to accomplish the results the two of you have discussed. What quadrant? 2. What about deep problem solving with that person? What quadrant? 2. Where's habit 2? Begin with the end in mind. 2. You have to be proactive to work on 2 because it won't act on you. But I'll tell you what's tremendous. Once you have habit 2 under your belt, a clear sense of purpose, you're saying yes so strongly to things that matter to you, it's easy to say no to other things. But people who are flaky and disorganized and undisciplined and haven't paid the price in coming up with a mission statement and a clear sense of their own goals, they're going to be distracted by anything that comes into their way. One time I went in to see one of my employees and said, could you take this project? And he said to me, that's what you'd like, Stephen, fine. And he pulled his board open, and there were his 29 different projects. He said, which would you like me to take down, Stephen? He knew exactly where he was going on the mall. See, if I were to take him down, who's responsible for that? So I said, listen, just forget it. I will go find someone else who's a crisis manager, see? Throw it to them. Really. If you want to enlarge your own area of discretionary time, little by little, just exercise more initiative and work in quadrant two. Quadrant two, and you'll find people will not give you crises. They'll get a few. You can live with them, but it will not be excessive. Quadrant three should be neglected, along with quadrant four. But all people know that quadrant four should be neglected. The question is quadrant three. It's urgent. It acts on you. And it's so easy to let the good keep you from your best in life, keep you from your unique contributions. In fact, the other day, my wife was invited to be a chairman of a committee in a community endeavor. She already had a number of other things on her platter, and she really didn't want to do this, but she felt kind of pressured into it. And she said, all right, I'll do it. And then she called up one of her dear friends to get her on her committee. And her friend gave this answer. Sandra, that sounds like such a good project, a really worthy undertaking. I appreciate so much your involving me and inviting me. I feel honored by it. I won't be participating myself, but I just want you to know how much I appreciate it, the invitation. Sandra could not handle that answer. She was ready for anything else, but a pleasant no. Really, very few people can say no and smile. You can say no and smile only when there's a bigger yes burning inside you. In fact, she turned around the phone and said to me, I wish I had said that. Really, how does a person have the courage to pleasantly, smilingly, non-apologetically say no? You learn to say no to the unimportant, no matter how urgent it is. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be involved in significant service projects. Those things are important. You have to decide what your high priority items are. The point I'm trying to make here is live in quadrant two and you will see quadrant one reduce itself down to very manageable proportions. You will be involved in significant prevention and the crises, the problems will be almost reduced to nothing. You'll still have some things you can't anticipate, but they won't throw you and beat you up like the pounding surf we talked about. Now, a man by the name of Pareto, an Italian philosopher, efficiency expert, developed what he called Pareto's Law. And it's been used now over the centuries, quoted as one of the most fundamental principles in the field of life and time management. Pareto's Law basically says this: 80% of the results flow from about 20% of the activities. 80% of the results, in other words, most of the results that you want, both P and PC, flow from about 20% of the activities, which means some activities have much more impact than others. Let's call those activities high leverage activities. Now, what do you think one of the key high leverage activities is? It's looking at all the other activities you do and asking the question, are they important to do? You see, what happens in any organization, in any family, is that that family or organization gradually develops an effective response to the different challenges that are being placed upon it. But when the challenges change, the response usually doesn't. And gradually, organizations accumulate many practices, report forms, meetings, procedures, which have become obsolete. They once had validity, but no longer. But they're looked on often by organizations like sacred cows. You don't change those things, see? That's the way it is. It's not the way it is. You're proactive. You can stand apart and examine anything and decide if it still is appropriate. Just exactly as Anwar Sadat did before he took that peace initiative and went to Israel. This is what high leverage means. Give your energies to the things that produce the greatest results. Now let us essentially restate habit number three. We call it first things first. But let's restate it in its full-blown character. Organize and execute around priorities. Three key words. Priorities, then organize and execute. Now, habit two taught us about priorities in terms of values and goals. Identification of the high leverage activities tells us about the priority activities that will produce the greatest results. Okay? Now, once you have clearly got a picture of your priorities, that is values, goals, and high leverage activities, now organize and execute around them. One sentence, essentially, is the summary of the whole field of life and time management. Organize and execute around priorities. Let's look at the word organize, and then a little later, look at the word execute. Because we've already discussed in depth prioritization. There's two ways, basically, to organize. One, to organize ourselves through a schedule. The other, to delegate. To delegate to other people. And then they can organize themselves around their priorities. But those are the two basic ways of organizing. Do it yourself or get someone else to do it. I commend to everybody, and I think probably most of you do this practice, the use of some kind of a scheduling tool. A scheduling tool. Some organizing tool that you can carry with you or have it fairly easily accessible to you so that you can always make sure that you're organizing and scheduling your life around your priorities. Let me discuss the characteristics of a good tool. Okay? A good planning tool or an organizing tool. I like the word organizing better than planning because organizing is a larger concept. Planning or scheduling your time is only one aspect of organization. You either do it and schedule yourself to do it, or you delegate someone else to do it. Organization implies not just time management and planning, but also your delegations and your working with other people. Let me say a thing about good organizing tools. And by the way, you may have one now. One that you can easily adapt to accommodate these six principles I'm trying to teach. I suggest that these are six characteristics of good organizing tools. One, coherence. Coherence. That means there is harmony and unity and integrity between your vision and mission, goals and roles, and the plans to accomplish those goals, your commitment, your discipline. And it's written right into your tool. It's coherent. You have it all. The tool covers long term. Write your mission statement down in the tool. Analyze what are the important roles of your life and write goals for every one of those roles in the tool. Then you've got balance, see, which is the second principle, balance. You're not neglecting, say, your health or your family or your professional preparation or your personal development or deep, meaningful communication with key people. Here's where it gets exciting. You've got to get a tool that meets the third criterion. Quad two. It must encourage you, motivate you, press against you to spend the requisite time in quad two. That's the key. So you're dealing with prevention rather than just crises and problems. I suggest adapt your tool or get one that gets you into weekly planning. You can still plan daily, prioritize on a daily basis, but the fundamental thrust is you think through a week. See, most people have been scripted into thinking over a week's time. Too many of the tools today deal only with the day-to-day planning. The long-term, then day-to-day. The week is the key interval that most people are geared to think about. And even a month. We can write into a month. But not day-to-day prioritizing the crises. How many have been in those kinds of tools before, where you're prioritizing crises? It's just a to-do list on crises. No matter how well they're organized with A, B, C, and everything else, you've got to get something into quadrant two. The other day I was with a group of people telling them about this, and someone said, well, we don't know. And I said, how do you feel about quadrant two? Oh, absolutely necessary. Are you doing it? No. You're not doing quadrant two. Got to have a weekly opportunity to plan all of the quadrant two activities, and you build it right in. And your quadrant one, because if you don't do quadrant one, remember, you're in trouble. And if the boat's sinking and you don't have time to fix the hole at the bottom of the boat, you're going to be spending all your time in quadrant one. It's a dilemma. If you only have that much time that's discretionary, goes to quadrant two. Only that much. All the rest is controlled. Give that much, quadrant two. Little by little, you'll see the discretionary time getting to go like this. Why? Because if you handle quadrant two, quadrant one will get smaller and smaller and be manageable. You'll still have a quadrant one. It may still take half your day. The other half, quadrant two. Now you're into high leverage activities, activities that are exciting and fun. The other day, a gentleman said after he decided to make a change to quadrant two, he said, I went through great withdrawal pains. He said, because I just loved opening the mail and responding to everything that came along, and it gave me an immediate sense of satisfaction. And then I thought, you know, I'm the head of this company. I'm spending no time in leadership. It's all crisis management. I'm going to skip time to leadership. Not only did he go through withdrawal pains, but everyone around him went through withdrawal pains because they expected him to be responsive to their requests. They were used to depending upon him for decisions. All of a sudden, he was out writing mission statements and trying to think through roles and goals and things of this nature. What's he doing, you know? It was hard, he said, but now it's been 9 months. Business has doubled. Profits quadrupled. Why? He's doing the right kinds of things. Producers do it. Managers delegate it. Leaders decide what it is. And he gave his energy to leadership. He decided what really is important. Next, you need a tool that deals with people. Not just schedules. So have a tool that deals with people. So you can record exactly what the agreements are, what the communications were, what desired results have been agreed upon. A tool that tells you when the accountability sessions will be, when people give progress reports on how well they're doing. Then you have complete delegation, and you've empowered other people. They've lessened their dependency upon you. Fifth, the tool must be flexible. It must be such that you can open it, close it, put things in, change it. It's always your servant, never your master. It has to work for you. The sixth and final characteristic, I suggest, is portable. It should be portable, that you're willing to carry it with you, to keep it with you, almost at all times. Maybe when you take a shower. But really, you keep it with you, right by you. You know what a lot of people think about all this scheduling? A lot of people think that it enslaves them. I don't want to live by a schedule. It kills my creativity. It kills my spontaneity. It doesn't serve me any. You know what the key is? You want to have freedom? You want to have time for spontaneity? What's the key? Get scheduled. Schedule yourself. Then you can buy all kinds of time. To me, a rich private life is so valuable that I have to fight to keep it, right? Because it's the source of where you get your power. If you're your own best friend, you have to go deep within yourself. That's your source. So you have to schedule it, see? So if you want to really have freedom and spontaneity, get scheduled. If you don't want freedom and spontaneity, but just want to cry about it a lot, then don't organize your life around a schedule. Just kind of float with what happens and the way the surf pounds in. And then you watch what your life is like. It'd be like going into your room and having no closet and no dresser drawers. What if you didn't have closet or dresser drawers? You know, just imagine what the room would look like. Now you got to go find the dress that you're going to use or the suit you're going to wear, see? Now that's what it would be like to live without a schedule. So I commend to you the development of a tool, a good tool, and the use of it on a regular basis. But above all, get one where you can write in your mission statement, your values and your goals, and then the high leverage activities, and then constantly review it every week.
This is the end of side 6.